Okay, welcome back, everybody. Good evening. Welcome back for continued Hilchos Shabbos. Actually, taking something of a detour tonight, discussing Hilchos Yom Tov as alongside the Halachos of Tchina that we've already looked through, we've already learned through together for Shabbos. First and foremost, tonight's shiur is being dedicated by Elian Rivka Sara Bekel, Ili Nishmas, her father David Yosef Ben Yaakov. May his neshama have an aliyah. And we'll take a look tonight, again, Hilchos Tchina for Yom Tov. So I think I mentioned this last time, that when it comes to the melachos of Yom Tov, it is not as simple a calculus as simply assuming that if you have a melacha that needs to be employed for the purpose of food preparation on Yom Tov, that it's an automatic yes. It's not neither is it an automatic yes, nor is it an automatic no. Obviously, there are many malachos that are otherwise usher on Shabbos that we, of course, do utilize, that we do employ, that we do undertake on Yom Tov for the purpose of food preparation, but for other purposes also. For other purposes also, we have a general rule of thumb that mitoch shehotra letzarech ochel nefesh hotra nami shelo letzarech ochel nefesh. Once something becomes permissible of ochel nefesh for the purpose of food prep on Yom Tov, then it's mutter for other purposes as well. So we know, for instance, that let's assume there was no Erev, or the Erev was down. This actually did happen, I think, not this past Sukkos, but the Sukkos before that, the Erev actually was down for a Yom Tov. Not as simple as just saying that it doesn't really matter because it's Yom Tov and anything can be carried, but we know that once something is mutter to be utilized. Once one malacha is mutter to be utilized for Yom Tov for the purpose of food prep, let's say carrying food from one house to another house, then it also becomes mutter to engage with that malacha for other reasons also. To be able to bring a game from one house to another house, to be able to bring a key from outside of my house, to be able to let myself back in, and other sorts of circumstances and examples. The question is, in the first place, is this the sort of malacha that was ever made mutter? So as a general rule of thumb, it becomes very difficult on our own to necessarily assess, and it's not just kind of like thinking through this. We need to know which malachos yes and which malachos no. Not as simple as just, well, my common sense, or I can assume, or I can figure that probably this malacha is or is not so important for the purpose of food prep on Yom Tov. But effectively, there are certain malachos that largely were made mutter or were considered mutter on Yom Tov, and many malachos that were not. General rule of thumb is that if something was necessary for food prep, because had you instead prepared the food from before Yom Tov, it would not have been appropriate, it wouldn't have been edible, or it would have been significantly worse if you had undertaken this act from before Yom Tov, prepared it before Yom Tov. If that would have been the case, that would have been significantly worse. Then those malachos are the kinds of malachos that are mutter to begin with. Otherwise, if these are malachos that really don't make a difference one way or the other, bona, as a general rule of thumb, bona is not mutter on Yom Tov, even if you could conceive of a manner in which maybe it would be employed for food preparation. Bona, building, is not mutter on Yom Tov. So when it comes to techina, when it comes to grinding certainly is one of those malachos that is in some circumstances mutter on Yom Tov. What we then need to grapple with, what we need to understand, and this is why we're learning through the halachas together, is when yes and when no. And to what degree and what variety, what manifestation or what expression of this malacha is mutter on Yom Tov, when yes and when not. When is this indeed part of we're within the parameters of proper food preparation or proper Yom Tov performance of malacha? And at what point do we say that it's really beyond the purview? And where are the sort of in between kinds of scenarios? Where on the one hand it's mutter, but we try to avoid, or we specifically employ certain measures that might help to mitigate the actual impact of the malacha to some degree. Okay, so those are some of the backdrop. Those are some of the bare bones, and let's make a point of trying to put some meat on the bones. Let's actually try to flesh this out and try to understand this without all the esoterics and in actual practical halacha. So let's begin. In all likelihood, this will probably be something of a shorter shiur tonight rather than trying to just dive into the first, you know, if or two of the next topic. But let's at least finish this off tonight with Tchina on Yom Tov. So let's take a look. Number one, this is Perek Zayin. Chiluke dinim yesh l'gabe Tchina. So there are different different dinim. There are different halachos when it comes to, and different gradations almost when it comes to this particular malacha on Yom Tov of Techina. Bein ochlin shehim gidulei karka lebein ochlin she'enam gidulei karka. Just bear in mind, right, that this parak is really meant to be taken completely on its own, at least potentially. We've just learned through Hilchos Techina for Hilchos Tochein for Shabbos. We already know that these chilukim, we already know that these distinctions exist. There's a distinction between gidulei karka and non-gidulei karka. There's a difference between those things that grow from the ground and those things that don't grow from the ground. Things that don't grow from the ground, we'll get back to this in the end, really are not subject to the malacha of tochein to begin with. Tochein applies initially, the way that we usually think of it is grinding kernels of grain in order to make flour, whether or not that was the actual manner in which it was employed in the Mishkan. More likely, it was more a matter of making dyes and taking berries and other kinds of, you know, herbals and botanicals and things like that, that they would then crush and grind. But either way, it applied in the Mishkan, and now we've addressed to gidulei karka and not to those things that don't grow from the ground. We'll circle back to that at the end of this section as well. Bein ochlin sheis kalkulu legamrei im yitchenam kodem lechag. There are also distinctions between those foods that would have been completely spoiled, completely ruined, if I had ground them up before the chag, before Yom Tov. If I would have gone about performing this act of tochen in order to prep the food before Yom Tov, geferlach would have been terrible. That food would have been basically completely ruined. There is a distinction between that group of foods and, on the other hand, ubein ochlin shelo yiskalkalu, they wouldn't have become completely damaged. They wouldn't have been completely ruined. Aval, however, ta'amam yafug, but their taste would have been neutralized. Their taste would have been weakened. Wouldn't be as geschmack. It wouldn't be as delicious. It wouldn't be quite as potent as, let's say, if I had ground it fresh right on the spot. And then one final category within this scheme is ubein ochlin shelo yifgamu klal. Wouldn't have been damaged at all. It would have been exactly the same had you ground it on Yom Tov or had you ground it before Yom Tov. No difference whatsoever. It's important to work through each one of those three different possibilities and understand that the halacha of tochen, the milacha of tochen, really, will apply and will express itself differently within each one of those three different categories. We'll move through them more methodically in the coming se'ifim. Im yitchanam kodem l'chag, if you grind them up before, or if you would grind them up before the chag, meaning to say that they would have been completely ruined had you done so, as we will explain again in the coming se'ifim. So let's actually take a look. First and foremost, this is se'if base. Ochlin shehem gidulei karka. So first of all, those things that are gidulei karka, so we know that if they're gidulei karka, if they grow from the ground, like berries or like grain, as would have been used initially in the Mishkan, so those items, certainly tochen applies to those items. But in this instance, had I performed the malacha before Yom Tov, had I gotten all my ducks in a row and had I done everything with plenty of advanced time and scheduling and prep, I could have prepared it before Yom Tov. The problem is, in this instance, when we're talking about this particular type of food, it would have been completely ruined. So, ochlin shein gidulei karka, granted they're gidulei karka, so tochen does apply to these items. These are food items that grow from the ground, let's say. Sheis kalkulim yitchanam kodem l'chag. It would have become completely ruined if I had done so before the chag, before Yom Tov. So what are some examples? Kagon binanot, like bananas. Bananas get completely ruined. They go completely brown. If you grind them up, if you were to mash a banana before Yom Tov, for the sake of the next day on Yom Tov, it's completely ruined. It wouldn't be nearly the same. It would be completely brown. It would have completely turned. Tapuche eitz, let's say apples. Ubitzalim or onions. Now, the truth is, I'm not sure why he says, I don't know if the reason why he's discussing onions is because when it comes to onions, once you chop them, forget it, they're totally neutralized if you leave them out for a day. I'm not sure whether that is or is not the case. There's another issue when it comes to onions, which is that leaving an onion unpeeled overnight becomes a problem of ruach ra'ah. That's really another shear for another time, but that applies to both bitzalim and also to beitzim, both to onions and eggs, that we are meant to leave them peeled until we actually put them to use. But that peeling onions in advance, or peeling eggs, like cracking eggs and the like, is problematic potentially for other reasons. I don't know that that's what he's talking about. More likely, simply because if you want an onion flavor and you chop onions and you just leave them out, now maybe covered and refrigerated would be different. I'm not sure exactly what the kavana here is specifically, but either way, you can imagine many other examples as well. I'm not sure. Maybe avocado would fall into this category as well. Maybe yes, maybe no. Again, so many things you can put in the fridge, Bisman has a, and they're kept, you know, relatively okay. But for the most part, things that are really, really going to turn quickly, they'll oxidize, they'll become brown, and that you wouldn't, nobody would ever prepare them really in advance. Bear in mind also that we've spoken at length at this point about mashing banana and mashing avocado on Shabbos itself, and being done in a manner that wouldn't really be in violation of Tochein. That's not true according to Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa himself. Rav Neuvert has noted in a number of places that mashing banana and mashing avocado really would be problematic on Shabbos. That would be an act of Tochein. What we've been speaking about for the past couple of weeks was a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein. We saw one that was quoted was actually a response written to Rabbi Eider and then incorporated into Rabbi Eider's Sefer on Hilchas Shabbos. At any rate, Rav Moshe's opinion that when you mash something of that nature, you mash a banana and it basically retains its full mass, it's just been flattened and mushed, but it's not like it's now been ground into individual particles or pieces, that Tochein probably doesn't really apply to that act. And therefore, certainly if you also employ a shinui, that would really be acceptable. That's at least according to Rav Moshe. Either way, Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa considers this to be a real act of Tochein. So if that's a real act of Tochein, so then let's talk about this act of Tochein. If I perform it in advance of Yom Tov again, that becomes problematic because it becomes completely ruined by the time I want to use it the next day on Yom Tov itself. So when it comes to this category, those things that if prepared in advance will really be significantly hampered, will basically be ruined by the time I want to use them on Yom Tov itself, Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa writes, Mutter l'tchonosam ba'ofen shiragila tochnam b'mos hachol. It is mutter to grind them, to mash them, to chop them, to slice them, to dice them in the manner that you ordinarily would, even during the week. Dahainu, what would that mean? What would that look like? So banana am b'shine hamazleg. You could even mash it with the back of a fork, which is exactly how anybody would mash it during the week. So he considers this on Shabbos to be the malacha of Tochein. Even though it's Tochein, this is still mutter on Yom Tov. Again, this is food prep. It's one of the malachos that's mutter for food prep. And moreover, this is, even in its particular form, is the sort of form of Tochein that had it been done before Yom Tov would have rendered the product basically useless or really significantly altered, significantly damaged compared to doing so fresh. Here's another example, tapuach eitz, gamba pumbia. Let's say grating an apple, even with an actual grater, or batzal gambis sakin gedola hamyuchedes lakach, or let's say dicing an onion, even with like a cleaver or the sort of real heavy knife that's used specifically to dice into very fine, very small pieces, a very, very fine dice, that would still be mutter. So again, even though you're using these objects that on Shabbos, even if you would say that you're chopping something in such a manner that it's really not Tochein, we still said that you have to shy away from these objects because these objects on Shabbos, we noted, still constitute an uvda d'chol. This is weak-like type of behavior. This is a weak-like activity. This is an object that's really relegated for chol purpose and really not on Shabbos. So even if you find a manner in which it would be mutter to do on Shabbos, we still said you have to avoid those items. You have to avoid those implements. Here, inasmuch as we would say Tochen is itself mutter, it can't be that you run afoul of Uvda Dechol. It's not that there's no such notion of Uvda Dechol on Yom Tov. It's just that the bar is set much higher, meaning as follows. Because there are so many actual malachos that are really mutter on Yom Tov, you can't say that performing that malacha in the manner in which you ordinarily do is an Uvda Dechol. It's not Chol-like. It's not the sort of thing that you would do during the work week. This is absolutely something you do on Yom Tov. It's just that it's mutter to cook and to prepare food on Yom Tov. We would never say, for example, that using a candle on Yom Tov is uvda d'chol. It's not uvda d'chol. It's mutter to light candles one from the next on Yom Tov. It's not that using a stove it's mutter to cook, but to use a stove, that's like the kind of thing you do during the week. Well, it's the kind of thing you do during the week relative to Shabbos, but it's not the kind of thing you during the week compare to Yontif relative to Yontif. It's cooking, but it's mutter to cook on Yom Tov. So Ovdut D'chol oftentimes really is an outcropping of the sort of activity that we know you're really not supposed to be doing on either Shabbos or Yom Tov. And therefore, when it comes to Yom Tov, the bar for what is considered Ovdut D'chol is set higher. We'll see some other examples in which there are certain kinds of equipment or tools or gadgets that really you shouldn't use because of Ovdut D'chol. But at least going about performing Tochen in the normal manner, well, if Tochen itself is mutter in these instances, then therefore it's also mutter to use all of those gizmos and gadgets. It's mutter to use a grater if it's being used properly, if it's being used for something that you're allowed to grate or allowed to grind on Yom Tov. V'gamach tocho so dak dak. It's even mutter to grind it very, very fine. Again, that is how we define what the malacha is. This malacha is mutter. It's mutter because it's something that's necessary for food prep. It's tzorach ochel nefesh. It's no different from cooking on Yom Tov. Cooking is absolutely asur on Shabbos. It's absolutely mutter on Yom Tov. So grinding or dicing is also absolutely asur on Shabbos, absolutely mutter on Yom Tov. And again, even using the kinds of gadgets that you usually use during the week would be mutter to employ on Yom Tov as well. Kfi sheragil asos bimos achol, you can do it in the exact same manner that you do it during the week. Mutter, that is all mutter. U'mutter la'avir yirakos mubushalm derech misanenes k'dei l'raskam. You could even press, let's say, cooked vegetables through a strainer in order to puree them effectively. You could even mash potatoes. Mevushalim, cooked potatoes, also some resek tapuche adama in order to make mashed potatoes. That ordinarily would be, well, certainly according to Shabbos Kilchasa, that would be an act of tochein on Shabbos. It could be that according to Rav Moshe, you'd say similar to a banana, similar to an avocado. Really, you're creating, it started off as a mush. It still is a mush. It's just a little mushier. Maybe that wouldn't be if you did it with, let's say, the back of a the handle of a fork or with a spoon. That would probably be mutter yud on Shabbos according to Rav Moshe, but certainly usher on Shabbos according to Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. Here on Yom Tov, it is mutter. It's mutter to use the potato masher. It's mutter to use the back of a fork. Whatever you want, it's all for food prep. It's appropriate food prep. That would be acceptable. This, by the way, this. The particular example that he's bringing when he's talking about mashing potatoes, v'chein mutter v'asek tapuche adam v'mushal nasosim resek tapuche adam v'chol zeh eno mutter kiyim l'tzorachos v'ayom davka. All of this, anything that we're talking about, obviously is only to be done for the needs of that day. To do it today on Yom Tov for, let's say, the next day, whether the next day is Yontif Sheni or the next day is a weekday, that's obviously not acceptable. That's not mutter. I just want to point this out, and I don't have great clarity on this. I would think that mashing cooked potatoes should not be part of this category. I would think that this is the sort of thing that really could be done the day before, and effectively not ruin the taste or not ruin the flavor. I'm not sure why this is being grouped here, necessarily. So either way, we'll see how this would be done, even if it's categorized differently. We'll see that. But that's anyway something that I just wanted to point out. Certainly when it comes to these other items that oxidize very quickly, that become brown very quickly, that lose their flavor, they completely lose their potency, maybe like the onion, those kinds of things. So couldn't really be done, really could not be done before Yom Tov. And therefore, when you do it on Yom Tov, you can do it in absolutely in the typical, normal, usual fashion. You would ordinarily mash, grind, or dice these things during the week. Now, let me I'll take your question in just 1 second. Achlom yom rishon shel chag liyom sheni shabo. By the way, since this is being published in Eretz Yisrael, what does he mean when he's talking about doing something on day one for day two? That means Rosh Hashanah, you see in the parentheses. You also know it's yom tov sheni shel dolios. All right, for all those chutznikim out there, if you happen to know any. So for us, even doing a malacha on day one for day two, that would already be problematic for other reasons. That's an issue of hachana. Can't do anything, even something that's completely mutter, something that completely avoids all malacha, that would still be usher to do from day one to day two. Okay, we'll speak about using an actual masher or grinder in the coming, an upcoming seif. Yeah, Natalie, you had a question.
Yeah, sorry. So those things that you're allowed to do on Yom Tov that you can't do on Shabbos, does that mean then those items on Yom Tov lose the muksa status? So like once you put those things down, like you couldn't move it then later on?
Correct, right. Okay. Meaning an object is only considered mutzah if it's, let's assume that it has no purpose, right? That's first and foremost. It has no purpose or even has an usur purpose, right? Its role, its purpose is prohibited. If its purpose is not prohibited because you could use it for a candle is not mutzah on Yom Tov, it's mutzah on Shabbos, not mutzah on Yom Tov because you could use it on Yom Tov. And any other such things, pots and pans, right? I mentioned briefly, pots and pans are probably, frying pan is mukta on Shabbos. It's a klisha malachta la'isser. Even if it's something that, maybe on occasion is brought and you eat out of directly and is brought, let's say, directly to the table for the most part, it's something that you cook food in, but not something that you eat directly out of or serve directly out of. Frying pan or a skillet, something like that, would probably be mukta on Shabbos. At least as a klisha malachta la'isser. Anyantif, it's not mukta at all. It's not that it's mukta, but I'm picking it up for a purpose that's mutter. And as much as it's really mutter to engage with those kinds of things, it wouldn't be mukta in the first place. So yes, even if you put it down, you can still move it around afterwards. Okay, let's take a look at Sif Gimel. Okay, so ochlin shehim gidulei karka v'lo yiskakol im yitchanam kodem l'chag. Let's talk about things that, again, gidulei karka, grow from the ground. So we're still assuming that tochen applies, but even though tochen applies, now we're getting into more of a gray area. It's not that they would have been ruined if I had ground them before Shabbos, or before Yom Tov, excuse me. You could have done so. What would have been the problem? What would have been the drawback? Not that they would have become completely brown, and once the bananas are brown, nobody wants to eat them, and once the apples are brown, nobody wants to eat them, but rather, aval tamam yafug v'lo b'miktas. It would have been that the flavor, not to no small degree, the flavor would have been altered. It doesn't mean it's inedible. It doesn't mean it's terrible, but that there is something epis about having freshly ground fill in the blank. So what are the freshly ground fill in the blank that people go gaga over? Kagon cafe, coffee, freshly ground coffee is a real thing. There's a reason why in like fancy coffee houses, why they take the beans and they grind them right on the spot as opposed to already being ground and then sitting in the bag, or at the very least, right? Even those who are not such mufunakim, right? You at least buy the beans and you grind it at home and then you put it back in the bag. So it's freshly ground-ish. It wasn't ground in the factory. At least it was ground in my own home, and it's being ground for, it's only been ground for a week or for 2 weeks. And then you get the people like me that'll just like take a teaspoon of Folgers crystals in the morning, just like to get through, Shacharis. But there's something about it. People like freshly ground coffee. It's a thing. It's a thing. It's an inyan. Chazeres. What about Chazeres? Both for the Seder and also Stam. You like your, by the way, it's not really, it's not Chazeres, it's Chazeret. What's the difference between Chazeres and Chazeret? Not only if you're Sephardi or Ashkenazi, or if you're speaking, if you're learning or speaking Ivrit, this is one of those great oddities of modern Hebrew. Chazeres at the Seder, Chazeres is what you have in addition to Maror. Meaning if your minug is to have horseradish for Maror, so then there's like Nacha Minug to also have Chazeres in Poland and in Eastern Europe. So you couldn't get romaine lettuce. The Gemara in Pesachim speaks about, gives us the order of preference for the different types of maror, and chazeres is top of the list, which we have this mesora refers to romaine lettuce. So what happens in my family's minna, going back generations in Eastern Europe, they always used maror, they always used horseradish because we couldn't get romaine lettuce. So then it's become this additional minna, like on top of having the horseradish. If you can also get romaine lettuce, then you have that too. Sometimes there's even a special place right on the Seder plate for it, and that's marked as chazeres. Why is this all interesting? Because in Ivrit, chazeret means horseradish. I don't know. That's just one of those things. So anyway, chazeres. So he's not talking about chopping romaine lettuce. He's talking about grinding horseradish. So both for the Seder, if you grind it too prematurely, maybe it ruins the flavor, and maybe the pungency has become so neutralized and so weakened that it no longer even qualifies, halachically speaking, as maror anymore, number one. Number two, maybe that's just your thing. Maybe that's your bag. You really like freshly grated horseradish. Vitavlin, freshly ground or grated spices, freshly grated and freshly ground nutmeg and freshly grated ginger and freshly ground black pepper. It's a big thing. How do you know it's a big thing? because there's such a thing as a pepper grinder. There's such a thing as a pepper mill. We just had a machlokas as to when we bought ours. I thought we had it like for, I thought it was like we scanned it. I remember scanning it with the scanner at Bed Bath & Beyond. That's what I thought. I thought we've had our pepper grinder for, going on 14 years here, but maybe not. Either way, these are things people keep in their pantry. You have it. You have like the spice rack, and then you have like a pepper grinder. Other spices that get, freshly ground. I don't know, for all the foodies today, like, oh yeah, you can't just have coriander. It has to be freshly ground coriander. All these things, it's a big deal. It's a big deal to have freshly ground spices. So on the one hand, it's not like if you have, okay, like, you know, the Chataya Ani Mazkir Hayom that I used the pre-ground black pepper in a recipe. Okay, like, they're not going to revoke my smicha, I don't think. But it's a thing to have freshly ground. It's not made up. There is something nicer and more delicious and more fresh about it. So in this instance, mutter l'tchon osam, it's mutter to still do it on yantif anyway. It's still part of food prep. It's still part of acceptable food prep. Absolutely okay. Ulam, however, rak alidei shinui. So here a shinui needs to be employed. This is like one of the earliest memories I have. Halachic memories anyway. I remember my father telling me this about the pepper grinder that my parents have. And I remember him telling me this. I asked him if you could grind pepper on yantif. And he said, yeah, but you have to use a shinui. So taka, but this is why. This is why, because it's this in-between category. On the one hand, it's something that legitimately you might want to have fresh. So it's not something that you could easily say, well, you should have done it before yantif. If I did it before yantif, it wouldn't have been as delicious as it is now. On the one hand. On the other hand, it's not something that absolutely must be done fresh. And if not, it would have been completely ruined. And therefore, it's mutter to do, but it should be done with a shinui. What does a shinui look like? Klamar, in other words. Shitchan osam acheres mimashkuhu ragila asos bimosachol. So he should do it in a way that's different from the way that you ordinarily do it during the week. How you would go about using a grinder, like a regular standard kitchen grinder or mill. So what does that look like? L'dogma. So for example, hey, ragil b'mosachol, if ordinarily during the week, ordinarily you grate horseradish with a grinder over a plate, right? So you hold that big, the metal like box grater, right over a plate, so that as you grind the horseradish, so it ends up going right on the plate. So the plate. This is interesting. This is actually brought by the Mishnah Berurah. So instead, what should you do on yantif? Yigara biyomtov agave pisat niyar. So instead, you should do it on a piece of paper. Don't do it on a plate. Do it on a piece of paper or agave mapa, or on top of a cloth. So don't do it onto a piece of plate. If that's ordinarily how you do it during the week, so then do something that shows that it's different. What's really interesting about this, just in terms of the lumdus and the mechanics behind it, is that it doesn't change the actual act, right? Ordinarily, we think about a shinui as something that changes the act itself. You're not changing the act itself. The act itself is still the exact same mode of grinding. It's the exact same mode of shredding. It's the exact same behavior. It's the exact same maisa. All you're changing is the context. What this indicates is that a shinui is more of installing a heker. It's showing that it's different, or it's a reminder that it's different, rather than in any which way really fundamentally altering or changing the maisa or the work or the malacha in this case that's actually being done. The malacha is the exact same malacha. Meaning to say, if you did this on Shabbos, it would be very difficult to say that because there's been this additional shinui, that therefore you haven't done the exact same malacha. Here, when we talk about employing a shinui, even just doing so onto a plate, just doing something that shows that it's different, you have to be careful. So that is sufficient when it comes to this issue of grinding, shredding, grating on Yom Tov. Again, specifically with these items that really, maybe I couldn't quite have done before Yom Tov, but wouldn't quite have been ruined if I did do them before Yom Tov. Another example, you go afilu al gabei tzalachas, or you do it on a plate, but aval yachsika sapumbia b'chivun hafuch. But you hold it backwards, you hold it upside down. So instead of grating down, you flip it over and you grate up, right? So you still have the friction right between the blades and the actual item that you're holding, but you just do it in a backward sort of fashion. Here again, you can only do it for that day. Can't grate anything on Yom Tov for the sake of the next day. That's a different issue altogether. That would be a problem of Hachana. But those would be the way to attack this. The way that you would deal with this, the way that you would be able to do so in a mutter fashion would be to do so while employing some sort of shinoi. So we have two categories thus far. We have those things that would have been completely ruined if you did them before Yom Tov. And those things, it's mutter, you could pull out all the stops. It's mutter to do them in any which fashion, in the exact manner that you would have done them on during the weekday themselves. You could use all the same equipment. You could hold the equipment in the exact same manner. Then you have those items that it would be best to do them fresh. But if I did them before Yom Tov, I can't say that it would have completely ruined the food. So therefore, it's still mutter to do it on Yom Tov. But now it's best, or now what's necessary is that you employ a shinoi. So when it comes to, let's say, a pepper mill, pepper grinder, so can you use a pepper grinder? Yes, freshly ground pepper is a thing in as much as they sell pepper grinders. They sell pepper grinders for a reason. So what would that mean? What would that look like? It would mean if ordinarily you hold it in your, if you're a righty and you hold it in your left hand, then you turn the top in your right hand. So doing it backwards, holding it in your right hand and turning the top in your left hand, or grabbing the bottom, the base with, you know, between two knuckles, or literally holding your hands backwards, or something that just gives it something of an oddity or something of a built-in heker. It's being done differently. Or doing it directly onto a plate and then pouring it into the food afterwards, as opposed to doing it directly over the food. Any of those means and any of those changes would be acceptable for this institution of a shinoi for that sort of thing. By the way, it comes up with they're really popular now. Salts, right? Actual salt crystals that I think are not. I don't know. Maybe they're just larger. I don't know if it matters one way or the other, but like the pink salt, the Himalayan salt, right, where it comes in like the larger crystals and it comes in a grinder and you actually have to grind it, all of those kinds of things. So I don't know there if that's really category two or category. I assume that the reason why, unless it's just purely for shtick, but I assume that there's something to be said for grinding it fresh. And if there wasn't something to be said for grinding it fresh, then we'd just sell it in like a regular shaker top as opposed to an actual grinder. Or I don't know, or maybe it's just all packaging and they're trying to dupe us into thinking that there's actually a mila to do the foolish customers. So I don't know one way or the other. If you figure it out, let me know. But anyway, all those grinders, if there is a mila to doing them fresh, so then that would be the manner, the means of going about doing so. Okay, so let's take a look at Dalin. Ochlin shem gedule karkav einam is kalkalin. So now this is final category. What about those things that are not, would not be ruined at all? Would not be ruined at all. You really should have just done this before Yontov. V'gam tamam lo yafugi mitchano sam kodem liyontov. And it's not that the taste would have been neutralized or would have been diluted in any which way had they been done before Yom Tov. Great example, kagon egozim, like nuts, right? It makes no difference if you have whole almonds, slivered almonds going back just one day. By the way, v'chein melach, salt also. I don't know. Maybe Shmir Shabbos Kilchus was looking into his crystal ball and he already saw this Shiloh coming down the pipe. I don't know. Maybe there is a difference between pink salt and white salt. I'm not sure. It's worth researching, though, knowing one way or the other. Is there really something to be said for actually freshly ground salt? I don't know. The difference with pepper is that when you go from peppercorn to pepper, right, to ground pepper, so like anything that's pungent and aromatic, that the longer it sits out, the more the taste and the flavor and the potency becomes diluted or neutralized. I don't know whether or not that's the case for salt. Again, I assume if they're selling it in grinders, then that's probably the case, but not sure. So min hadin l'tchono sam kodem l'chag. The truth is, these things you should really take care of before Yom Tov. Walnuts should already be chopped before, even if you're planning on assembling the charoses, let's say the night of the Seder. So the walnuts should really already be chopped before Yom Tov. It makes no difference. It's not that it's going to be fresher. It's not that it's going to be better. And you should not rely upon the fact that, well, even if I just wait until Yontif, it's no problem. I'll just do it kind of in a backhanded sort of fashion. I'll just, you know, crush it with the blade of the knife rather than actually chopping through like I usually do. That shouldn't be done. V'rak b'di'eved. However, now, it, on the one hand, it's true b'di'eved, but rak b'di'eved, only b'di'eved, only if you forgot. You should not plan on doing so. On doing so on Yom Tov, it really should be taken care of in advance of Yom Tov. Only be the evidence if you forgot. You didn't do it. You didn't know. You didn't realize. Didn't occur to you. I could have sworn I had a bag of chopped walnuts next to the bag of whole walnuts. And now here we are in an Chavrosas and I don't have the chopped walnuts. Find yourself in that position. Then mutter l'tchonos ha'mafilo b'Yom Tov. Then it would be mutter to chop them and to dice them, grind them, even on Yom Tov itself. Even using a specialized kli, even using something that ordinarily is used, even during the week. However, and we're going to come back to this, you can't use something that ordinarily would be used to ground a great deal, a great quantity of nuts, let's say, for an elongated period of time for many days, meaning to say, I'm going to need ground coffee for the next month or whatever. So using something that's large enough, almost like the difference between household or industrial, or the difference between something that ordinarily is used for a very, very large quantity, even at home, as opposed to something much smaller. You should use something that's small, that's very portable, that chops or grinds just a small bit at a time, as opposed to something that's really substantial. You think generally bizman hazeh, when we think about things that chop or grind a very large quantity of things for, you know, many days worth, I think usually those things end up being electric appliances anyway, bizman hazeh, and are already usher for other reasons. Again, you have to still employ the shinui, just as we mentioned previously. Only for that day. Only for that day. Even when it's mutter. Even when we say it's mutter to do this malacha, it's only mutter to actually prepare food on Yom Tov for Yom Tov. It's never mutter to prepare on Yom Tov for after Yom Tov. Okay. Now, we already spoke about this with Hilchos Shabbos. It's worth just revisiting again for the purpose of Yom Tov. Let's say we're dealing with things that are already themselves made. They are comprised, they are composed of something, of another item, another ingredient that really had already been ground. Kagon, kol divrei ma'afa hanafim mitvua tchuna. Let's say baked goods. So any baked goods that are made of ground flour and then mixed together with other liquids and things like that, but the only item there that gives it enough substance to be able to really to regrind and re-dice or crumble is because of the flour. The flour is already crumbled. The flour is already ground. So this is the notion that we mentioned for Hilchos Shabbos of ein tchina achar tchina, that once it's already been tachun once, once it's already been ground once, even though it's now reconstituted and baked and reformed, you cannot grind it all over again. That doesn't qualify. O sukar gvishi, or let's say a sugar cube. Mutar lachzor v'letchonosam b'yom tov. Again, you can go back and you could regrind it on Yom Tov itself, just like we said it was mutter to do on Shabbos. Va'filu ba'ofen shirigim l'tchon osam b'mosachol, even the way that you would ordinarily do it during the week. Why? Because this is mutter, it's fundamentally mutter. This isn't even considered to be an act of tchina to begin with. Again, even using those things that you usually use, specialized equipment, can't speak about uvda d'chol when it comes to something that is completely mutter in the first place. Even if using the equipment that is usually used, it's usually used to do something that's always mutter. So therefore, it must be mutter to use that equipment now, particularly on Yontif. Or even, let's say, the alternate use might be for something that, you know, you ordinarily would be considered tchina for Shabbos. But again, for Yom Tov, all these things are mutter to begin with. Again, you can't use those things that ordinarily you use for, let's say, many days worth of a supply of ground, whatever. But you got to be careful again, because even though we say that ain't tchina achar tchina, Even though we say that since it's already been ground once, it cannot be ground again. If you take crackers and crumble them, they've already matzah and crumble it. It's already been ground once. You can't crumble it again. It's already tachon. It's already ground, even though it's been reconstituted. So therefore, you just need to be careful, not because of malacha. You only need to be careful not to do this for tomorrow and for the next day and for Chol HaMoed and for whatever else, because that would be an issue of hachana. Again, we'll get into this in just a couple of se'ifim from now with respect to regular kitchen gadgets and grinders and things like that. Once it has been ground, this is just an important, I don't remember him saying this actually. Maybe he did, I don't remember now. But an important qualification here. Once it's been ground, let's say, what would you be grinding? You might be grinding, mentioned last time, you might be grinding something that's already been ground, chocolate. Chocolate's already been ground. So you want chocolate shavings, let's say, for the top of a dessert. So in this case, you could even use like a vegetable peeler. Even if a vegetable peeler is, let's say, usur on Shabbos, on Yom Tov, it would be mutter to use one of those, such a gadget. Let's say, or even just a heavy knife, let's say, Oreo crumbs for the top of a pie or something like that. So Oreo crumbs or graham cracker crumbs, whatever it is. Now you grind it all up. You have to be careful. You have to be careful not to separate those items, not to separate those chunks that, let's say, are unwanted. So I grind up a bunch of graham crackers on a plate. I'm going to sprinkle it over the top of a pie, a bunch of Oreo crumbs, cookie crumbs, whatever, on a plate. Sprinkle it over the top of a dessert. And I end up with like a handful of chunks that just never got, you know, ground up well enough. Got to be careful about picking those pieces out. Picking those pieces out, the large unwanted chunks, would be an act of borer. Mishum chashashis or borer, out of concern of borer, separating unwanted psoles, unwanted, quote unquote, so to speak, refuse from the actual food that you're using, even though you're more than happy to eat it. But nevertheless, for this purpose, you'd be separating the bad from the good. Got to watch out for that. Rather, you just maybe slide a whole tablespoon's worth off the plate, both the finely ground with the not finely ground, and then you're separating just a portion of the tarovas, a portion of the mixture, as opposed to picking out the unique items that you specifically don't want. So there's an issue of boer that we need to be mindful of here, but otherwise this act generally would be totally mutter. Ochlin she'enam gidulei karka. Foods that don't grow from the ground. We already know this, but foods that don't grow from the ground could go in beitzim, basar, dagim, ugvina, kasher. Let's say eggs and meat and fish and tuna fish and cheese. Mutter l'ma'ech gam l'chatchila b'mazleik. Even l'chatchila, you could use a fork to mash these things. Hardened, feta cheese or something like that. Kedarko u'mabli l'shanos. And in the normal fashion, you don't have to change that at all. And this is mutter, even if. It's not that had I done it previously, had I done it before Yom Tov, it would have been ruined. The taste would have been terrible. Even if the taste would have been exactly the same. It's not the point. The point is that it's not tochen to begin with. It's not considered to be tochen to grind something that's not gidulei karka, to grind something that doesn't grow from the ground. Tochen in the first place only relates to those items that do grow from the ground. This would not be considered a malacha to begin with. So now, those things that ordinarily are ground in some sort of mill, kimo, and we don't usually use these things anymore at home, but kimo, basar v'dagim, kafe, matzah, etc. Things that are ground, you have like an actual, like a handmill, you know, you crank it, and obviously you couldn't use anything electric anyway, but let's say like a handmill, and it's actually, you roll and you roll and you roll, and the blades and the teeth do their work, and you come out with a ground product on the other end. Really, these should be prepared from the day before. But lo asakein, if you didn't do so, the problem here is the uvdudchol aspect of using this like heavy duty, more kind of machinery that we really don't engage with on Yom Tov. So lo asa, really that should be prepared ahead of time. But lo asakein, if you didn't do so, then mutar l'tchonosam b'matchenas matbach. You can do so as long as it's like a household appliance. Obviously, you can't use any electric appliances. I think that probably goes without saying. And also not using a real heavy-duty grinder. The idea is it needs to be household. So this is already, it's like it's treading on, it's right on the cusp of possible Uvdin D'chol. It's right on the threshold of Uvdin D'chol. But if you're using something that's at least a handhold item or a household item, not just a handheld item, but a household item, something that we ordinarily keep in our kitchens, so then being that this is for Tzarech Ochel Nefesh, for Yom Tov, it would be acceptable. However, you have to make sure that in no way, even if it's not electric, we're not using anything that would be considered to be real industrial or commercial style equipment on Yom Tov. That would be a problem of Uvdin D'chol, even if the actual act that you're performing itself is fundamentally mutter. B'kasherhu tochen baser v'dagim ya'asezos ali de shinui. And when he does so, he should do so with a shinui. Kagon tchonosam al gabe niyar o al gabe mapa. Again, if you're using a grinder instead of going directly into a basin or a bowl or a plate, he should go onto, let's say, a piece of paper or something like that, or onto a cloth. Ulgabe tchinas hakafe. Let's say he's grinding coffee. Tov lihimanan liyashtamesh b'matchana b'chol ofen. The truth is, when it comes to coffee, which is gidule karka, that's the difference. If you're doing meat and fish, nakidule karka, really, it's a real isolated issue of being nothing but of the d'chol. When it comes to coffee, there's also the further problem of the fact that this is closer to tochen, because it is gidule karka, it grows from the ground. Really best to refrain from doing so. The ilu divrei ma'afa hanefim mitvat chuna, when it comes to things that have already been ground before, kagon matzo mutu l'ton matchanet b'sha'at ha-tzorech af b'li kol shinui. So the point is that using something that is a much more of like a heavy duty grinder, like where you're talking about real industrial equipment, not something handheld like a pepper mill, but something that's more industrial equipment where you're putting some feeding food into a hopper and when grinding a crank. I don't think we have these things anymore. If anybody's using these, you're using a food processor anyway, and it's all academic because that's not mutter anyanta for other reasons. But either way, here, the point is that you're using something that's real heavy-duty, industrial-style equipment, and therefore we would want to shy away from that, ideally, on Yom Tov. In certain circumstances, it might be mutter, but again, I think for the most part, Bizmana said that halacha is academic, because the kinds of things and appliances that we're using anyway to create and prepare large quantities are themselves electric appliances. Okay, so a little taste of Yom Tov here. I know this sort of veered away a little bit from Hilchos Shabbos. I thought it was very, very worthwhile. Being that we had just done Hilchos Shabbos to best understand the differences now between Shabbos and Yom Tov. And Mirtz Hashem, next time we'll delve back into, I guess, more mainstream and true, genuine Hilchos Shabbos. What I would think I would like to do, I'm a little, my only concern, I'm a little hesitant, is only that it's a particularly long field or realm of halacha to dive into, but I think it really has been a while, I think, since as a shul, and usually I try to get into other areas that I think are the road less traveled and probably less explored. I think that whenever anyone starts with Hilchos Shabbos, indeed it's the first parak of Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, whenever we start with the Shabbos kitchen, right? So we think about Bishul B'Shabbos, right? It's a number one, it's first on everybody's list, the first thing that we learn about, first thing that we interact with when we think about setting up homes and kitchens and things of that nature. On the one hand, I feel like it's almost like beating a dead horse on the one hand. On the other hand, everything needs chazara. And I think it's been a while, certainly since as a shul, as a group, we've learned through Hilchos Bishul of Shabbos together. So I think probably the time is now. My only hesitation is that, again, it's a particularly lengthy realm or field of Hilchos Shabbos. And I'm a little bit concerned about maybe, burnout over the course of our trying to learn it together. So that's my only hesitation. If everybody's game to learn Hilchos Shabbos, I'd be delighted to pick that up next time. If anybody has any other suggestions or ideas or other melachos that they think are maybe more relevant or would just like to touch on, again, this is going to be kind of a longer section. If there's anything specifically, if there's like overwhelming interest, certainly in doing anything else, I'm all ears. Please let me know. Speak up. Send me a message during the week. And either way, Mirtz Hashem, will meet back here Tuesday night, a week from now. Okay, everyone have 1 second. Something on the chat just before we go. Game for Bishop.
Did you find out about that, the Raymond soup or the?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. Okay, so I tried a little bit more. I think the whatever we first came up with, whatever I found last week while we were on the shiur, mentioned that sometimes they are fried. Near as I can tell, that's not standard. It seems like for the most part, the way that they're dealt with is that the noodles are steamed first. If they're really only steamed first, then that doesn't necessarily qualify as actual bishul. If they've never been submerged, immersed in actual hot water, it'd be difficult to say that that's actual real bishul. What does that mean? So that means, again, if you're somech on Rav Moshe's heter, shita, kula, that you can put anything into a kli shlishi, you can still put it into a kli shlishi. So what that would mean is, and this is probably more relevant, I think, for the ramen noodle packs than like the cup of noodles, although it's the same stuff, is that it would mean going from urn to mug to bowl and then dropping the noodles into that. So if that would be a kli shlishi, that would still be acceptable. Again, assuming that you ordinarily do that. If ordinarily you you're the tea essence family, ordinarily you don't use tea bags, ordinarily you're not somach, you don't rely on the idea of a kli shlishi, don't make ramen noodles on Shabbos. But it does not seem that there is that it can be said that they've already really, really been cooked and really submerged in hot water enough to say in bishul achar bishul, and that you can even put it, let's say, into a kli rishon or pouring from a kli rishon. So be careful. If you use kli shlishi for other purposes, you can certainly use kli shlishi for this. But otherwise best avoided on Shabbos.
If it was in the package, in the cup, you would just do the same thing, no? From urn to
it would be the same thing, except the only reason why I say this is that it might be impractical, meaning you may need to end up in a fourth kli, right? Because if it's in the cup, I don't know how easily those noodles come out of the cup. If they just slide back out, then they slide out. If you're making it inside the cup, you'd still need the water to first be a kli shlishi before you could then pour it into the cup, which means that by the time it gets into the cup, all it just means is that it's now a kli revi'i, not a kli shlishi, because the water already needed to be shlishi before interacting with the noodles. It might just be that it's really cooled off, you know, a few degrees too many by the time it actually makes it into the cup, and maybe it's just not worthwhile anymore, because it also has to steep for a while. So in theory, all that should work, and all that is fair game. You have to ask yourself or ask your kids whether or not it's still worth it and whether or not they still want it. It's really easy. It's a piece of cake. I just want to make a couple of noodles. It's the easiest thing. You're looking around. There's like a mountain of dishes from this like one from this one bowl of ramen. Oh, you're like, we're at like a clear V here. So you have to decide whether or not it's worth it. But in theory, yeah, it would be totally acceptable.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Have a wonderful night, everybody. Thanks again for joining in. Meet back here next Tuesday. Mirza Shem. Have a great night.
Thank you. Good night. Rabbi Bienenfeld, is there any little prep talking about Purim yet?